Welcome to Funnel Reboot, the podcast that shares ideas on how to upgrade your lead generation. Here is your host, Glenn Schmeltzley.
Hey, Glenn here. Welcome to Funnel Reboot, where we explore how to upgrade your lead generation. If you haven't caught the last few episodes, we had a couple of interesting ones, including one that talked about leveling the playing field with the big tech giants in the ad platform game. And we also talked about voice recognition technology. If you want to catch those shows, I welcome you to go ahead and subscribe wherever you listen to audio. So getting to today's show, we're going to talk about strong social tactics. Now, I don't know if you frequent the same social channels that I'm using for the podcast. Those are Instagram, Twitter, and my personal LinkedIn feed. I've been putting posts for about the past 3 years on those platforms. The one thing I can tell you is that without paid promotion, it takes real work to reach a decent-sized audience. And I wanted to know how others play this game, so I asked someone who started promoting things on Facebook 15 years ago. Now, he's not on all the social channels, and he doesn't pretend to keep his Twitter account active. But for the company that's his day job and the clients that he serves through his boutique agency, I know that he knows how to use content that gets noticed. So we're going to delve into what it takes to get that happening in a productive way for your business. Today's guest has headed the marketing teams at both public and private sector organizations, and he holds a Bachelor of Business Administration degree from St. Francis Xavier. He's a recipient of Ottawa's 40 Under 40 Award, and he does a lot of good things in the community. I want you to listen for his explanation on how you should conceive and create content. And listen also to the great job he does of outlining how social selling should work to smoothly shift a dialogue from public commenting with someone to continuing that conversation through direct messaging. Well, let's now go and learn how to up our social media game with Kyle Turk. Well, let's hear from today's guest. Welcome to the show, Kyle.
Thanks for having me, Glenn.
So, Kyle Turk, you wear many hats. Do you maybe want to start off by telling us what you currently do in the field of marketing?
Yeah, so I'm the VP of marketing at Keynote Search, an executive search company, as well as the president and CEO of Meerkat Marketing, which is kind of a boutique agency. I also help out my wife with her business and her marketing. So that's also a full-time job.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think we've added to over 100% there, but yeah, I was never that good at math. But social media is something that you obviously have had exposure to, and I know you to be a fairly early adopter and to have tried a number of different things. So why don't we talk in general about what some smart strategies are with social media, and I suppose the quickest place that we should jump in is, let's talk about the different networks. I think that people sometimes just do a simple analysis of, you know, who's the biggest, and they start there and they end there. Is that a fair way to think about social media, or should we put a little bit more discipline into thinking which social media channels we want to be on?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many social channels and there's always new ones popping up. And I think it's important, obviously the first thing is to do is just, you know, assess your target market and where do they spend most of their time. Most people are on more than one channel, so it'll probably make sense that you're on multiple channels, but you don't need to be on them all. If you're B2B, then, you know, LinkedIn is probably going to be one of your top platforms. If you're B2C consumer brand, you know, TikTok, Instagram, those will kind of be where you lean towards. In terms of where your target is and who you're targeting. So it really just depends on the target.
Yeah. I think we can even slice it more finely. And this is just in the last couple of years, but the emergence of different formats. You know, if I take LinkedIn, for example, LinkedIn is, they're trying to push people more towards
newsletters. They're trying to revive their groups. They're trying to get people to jump into the articles. So, you know, we can't just look at LinkedIn as one monolithic channel. Twitter, same yeah. true. Twitter Spaces, right? So you can go audio. You don't just have to be on their feed platform. And I know that they've got this thing called Review now, which is also a newsletter type offering. So, you know, am I right that, you know, we have to even chunk down into which type of posting we're going to do on which channel?
Yeah, I think, you know, you nailed it on the head there. But like, I think each platform, you can have different objectives, and you may have multiple objectives on one platform, right? So it's a matter of coming up with a strategy and a plan and how, you know, those corporate objective of yours, which platform and which type of, you know, objective on that platform is going to achieve your corporate goals. So it's kind of looking at it as kind of a full view, and then kind of chunking in where and how you're going to use each platform.
What would you say to people who are digging their heels in at this point, imagining that they can just continue to do marketing on the internet without even touching social media? And, you know, what do you say to those people who don't think it's an effective place for engaging?
Yeah, there's lots of people that say they just don't have time for it and it doesn't work and they don't see it. I tell them, if you're not getting a return on social, then you're not doing it properly. There's tons of people that post and, you know, Glenn, you've probably seen it too, that are just, you know, you know, what is this? Like, this is terrible. I would never engage with this. This is doing your brand a negative service. So I think it's a matter of, if it's not working for you, look at a different strategy of what you're doing and how you're going to get better results from it.
Right. Okay. So that comes down to understanding what results look like.
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah, it's fair enough to say that if we look at a competitor who's doing a good job of social, it's out in the public how many likes and comments they get, and we can even see who is doing that. So, you know, it's probably good for us to, I'm not saying to copy competition, but if we're just completely at a mental block about where to start, yeah, maybe we should look at what some other people are doing.
Always, yeah. It's obviously, you don't want to copy it, as you said, but a great starting point is, you know, there's so much out there. You can see what works on the platform and what type of objectives your competitors are trying to drive from them, and find similar ways to do it for yourself. You know, every post that goes out, most of them have already been done before in a different way by a different company. It's very rare that you see something that you're like, mind blown by, that, you know, this is, you know, wildly innovative as a post, right? Yeah. Most times you have seen basically something and similar types of campaigns. So yeah, definitely looking at what other people have done, and trying to kind of emulate that to drive better performance.
Yeah, you've said it well, as far as nothing completely new being out there. And it makes me think of one kind of content that you favor, and that's user generated content. And, you know, full disclosure, I was part of one of the user generated content efforts that you did. Why don't you tell our listeners, you know, what you do to bring together sometimes things that people have already written and posted elsewhere, but to try and give them either a new position or a new audience who might not have seen them.
Yeah, I think, you know, at this point in the game, especially with, you know, content online, it's very rare that you're going to come across something that you've never read about or never heard that topic being discussed before. Basically, if you want to know anything, you just Google it right now and you'll get thousands of results for it, right? No matter what it is. So I think finding, you know, different influencers in different spaces, whether it's a marketing influencer like yourself, and having them kind of tell their side of the story is a lot more interesting to somebody than reading, you know, the top three tips on how to do lead generation. You know, I could read that, or I could read Glenn tell me, here's the top three things that I do that work, because that to me is more credible and more proven than anybody writing just three general tips that are very, you know, best practices that kind of are very, very vague.
You've also taken people like me and others and put them together in a roundup. How yep. those work for you?
It's funny. Those perform, I'm going to say 10 times better than just our general content. Obviously, people still love people. People want to see people online. So the more you can incorporate people into your posts, whether you're B2B or B2C, the more engagement you're going to get. Because I've got your network now that wants to check it out, see what Glenn has said. I've got the network of, you know, the John Doe as well. That was part of the article that they want to see what John Doe said. And then they're going to be interested in, oh, but who's this Glenn guy? What did he have to say? So it kind of snowballs like that. So I think, you know, for us at Keynote, we do some of those roundups, whether it's, you know, expert tips from CFOs on, you know, COVID reporting, whatever it might be. Those roundups featuring real life examples, stories, success stories, or tips from people instead of brands, it just resonates so much better.
So take me behind the scenes on, you know, there's maybe you, somebody else sitting around in a conference room with a whiteboard. How do you come up with it? You know, you've got to, as you say, you don't want to just say, give us your top three tips. So you've got to have an interesting angle, and then you've got to have an interesting list of people you approach. So can you give us some general principles that you use to come up with, you know, these roundups?
Well, I think a lot of content is educational. So it's trying to find, you know, what's a core problem in the marketplace? What are people dealing with right now that they would look to somebody to get some help on? So the first thing would be identifying, you know, a topic or a problem. And then it would be, okay, who would be the best experts that we know, or maybe we're researching on LinkedIn to try to find an expert on a certain topic. And who are they that would be credible? They're successful. You know, they're well, you know, well known and established in their industries or for certain topics. And then it's just a matter of outreach and reaching out to them and, you know, engaging them in that conversation, where a lot of it is more conversational than kind of presenting, right? Because a lot of people try to do that presentation approach. And I find that isn't as effective as a more conversational approach. The more conversational it is, the more people can relate to it and it's more engaging. If it's a presentation or you're being told something and they're telling you X, Y, Z, you tend to kind of tune it out. It's almost like in school. I don't know about you, Glenn, but if you go way back to our days in school, you know, if there's a presentation, it's never really that engaging. And if it's more conversational and different, you're getting different perspectives from different people in a discussion in a classroom, everybody seems to kind of tune in and be a part of it.
Yeah, without a doubt. So despite the fact that we do at some point have to report good metrics, you're saying that for these particular kind of posts, they're there to maybe cement brand awareness. They're there to help people understand maybe what slant you take on things. You know, you weave in your company's view of it, but these are not the ones where you're hammering towards a call to action.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you can throw a call to action in if there is a related, say you've done a white paper, for example, on, you know, finding a CMO, you know, as an, we're an executive search company. So if I do a one on a marketing and different experts contributing to that, well, maybe the call to action at the end is, you know, check out our guide on how to hire a marketer, because a lot of people reading it maybe aren't marketers, but they're business owners who need help with their marketing. And then they, you know, we can drive them to help us, use us to find them a marketer that would be as, you know, insightful as the ones in our article.
Yeah. And so that's a good point. It to me seems a little bit like just lengthening the runway that you're giving. It's all talking about the problem, right? So we're still staying on, you know, I have a need for this kind of like CMO talent. And maybe you have that user generated roundup of all the people who are saying what they want. So your reader absorbs that. And for some, that might do it. But for others, you want to still leave, do you still want more? We have a white paper that talks about this. Link in the comments.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And you're leaving it up to them, right? That's, I think, the nice thing about it. It may require us as marketers to not marry, things like a number of impressions or engagements and then the number of people who actually signed up for the white paper. We may want to relax a little and not hold ourselves to, those click-through rates so highly, but we have to trust that those people who are in market right now will more than likely be the ones who go and get that white paper.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What's your take on other kinds of call to actions, like sign up for something that is time sensitive or a webinar or virtual event? Again, we're recording this in late 2021, so perhaps a lot of people are a little tired of the number of invites that they get for those. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think, since COVID, the pandemic especially, has changed a lot of things online. One of them being there are so many webinars, there are so many guides to download and different calls to action. I find people are a bit fed up with that. People don't want to become a lead in somebody's system because they know they're just going to get spammed and, call it spam, call it kind of follow up to certain people that might be interested, but you know what I mean, right? People are just the call to action, performance, in my opinion, has since COVID dropped drastically. You may have a different opinion being, on that lead generation side. But for me, and I find especially in B2B services, people just don't want to be, they don't want to give out their information. They don't want to be bothered. They want to go through a journey on their own account and, they don't want to be told where to go next with a call to action and they just ignore it. So I found the call to actions have become almost, just not useful anymore. If to some extent, right?
Yeah. So I think it definitely has fallen away from looking at it from a multimedia format. Meaning, what I remember, what I think we've seen in years past was if you had shot a video or you were going to have a live virtual event, they used to be rare enough that you would put out a text post saying, this is going to happen. And if you want to see these people on video, you have to sign up, right? So the CTA is, go watch something. And I think that's just been like atomized, like it's been blown into
big time.
No, if you want to see somebody, that kind of video is out there ungated and broken into, little minute or 3 minute segments right inside your organic feed. So there's no signing up for that anymore. That's table stakes.
So, I mean, for me too, like from a marketer perspective in converting revenue, if you can get, if you have people engaging in your gated content, for a marketer to try to convert that person who just submitted to download to get more information on something, is way harder than, engaging with people and then, showcasing your credibility, your professionalism, your leadership in an industry, and having them kind of write you even just through your website and proactively reach out to you. If you can get those proactive leads, call them, your conversion rate on those are going to be like 100 times higher than that of somebody filling out gated content. And I've seen that a lot. So we've actually moved a lot of our focus into, let's just, get out there more, get that brand awareness, credibility up. And instead of trying to always get people's information so we can convert revenue and try to, talk to them, it's let's put it out there. Let's put these guides out for free. Let's have people read them. And then if they're interested, they'll get in touch with us if they need more information, right? Or would like to hire, use our services. So we've moved a lot to that kind of strategy.
Totally. I think this has the other factor that I'm kind of watching here is the movement away from brands and company pages and towards individuals that represent the brand.
Yeah.
This is, I'm sure for some top executives, really nerve-wracking because they're thinking, but these people might leave my company. Well, that's just the risk you have to take. Right. But if you've got these people advocating for you, I'm hearing what you say, instead of them sending someone to this like centralized on your website landing page that's going to push towards a sign up, maybe it happens as naturally as someone sends them a DM, right? Or they begin having a conversation with somebody in the comments of a post, and it segues over to a DM, or as LinkedIn is now doing it, you can go straight into a visual call, get an on the spot one-to-one meeting, right there. Right.
Yeah.
This is all very, it's now frictionless to do it that way. So I suppose if we're going to take at least LinkedIn's cue that, you know, people seem to want this. So it's up to us now as companies, you know, onus is on us to follow suit.
Yeah. The one thing though, I'm sure your LinkedIn inbox is just, you know, getting spammed by so many people trying to sell you. Right. So I find the LinkedIn inbox has become almost as well, just non-performing. You know, I get there's a numbers game. If you message enough people on the inbox, you may get one or two, but like I pay no attention to my LinkedIn inbox. And, you know, even LinkedIn, you know, they're now providing this kind of one-to-one video call service. And, you know, it might be here to stay, it might not. Like if you looked at LinkedIn stories, I think they're already gone now or on their way out. And that was something they thought people wanted as well. As they saw the platform kind of moving more towards a Facebook and more about some of that personal posts on the platform. But it didn't take off. And, you know, I don't think anybody, I tried the stories a couple times, and the view count was just horrendous. Like there's almost nobody looking at them.
There's that dimension to it. I think there's also a dimension of how the tone of these things is. So, I get what they were trying to do with lightening up the tone a little bit. What's your take on how much people should share? As you say, there's, you know, parts to our own lives. I mean, we've all been literally looking inside of each other's houses, since we've had to do virtual calls, right? And that's been the only option. So how much of our, you know, selves, is it right to bring in? Does it have any business being in a post that is supposed to have some marketing effect, or, you know, are we supposed to keep it all serious and buttoned down?
Yeah, definitely not. I'd say somewhere in between. And I think it also depends on what your audience wants and what your connections want to see from you. There are people out there that are very successful, at garnering engagement. You know, sometimes I question whether they're able to drive any revenues from that. But there's people, there are very successful people and call them LinkedIn influencers, for example, if we're going to stay on that platform. And you know, it works for them to share every piece about themselves on the platform, and they have a following of people that want to support them and want to know more about them. You know, and then there's the people that, you know, are always serious and buttoned up, and anything they post is just super polished and professional. And I think that also, you know, isn't the route to go. But it might be their, you know, they're in a position where they have to be taken seriously by their connections or audiences, and maybe that works for them. Me, I'm kind of more, if you have something to say and it's important, or it's important to share, whether it's kind of more personal or not, then I'd say there's a place for it. Personally, I don't do a ton of personal posts on there, but I will do You know, I like to think of myself as kind of a fun, kind of lighter guy. So, you know, I'll post pictures of me golfing, you know, stuff like that, where it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, business by any means, other than maybe some of my guests are, you know, also, you know, professionals or business owners. But yeah, it's more just, hey, you know, you got to take some time to golf and have some fun too. And sometimes I'll post that. And it's funny, the golf pictures on LinkedIn seem to be, I feel like those are the best posts. And yeah, it's so funny. Like, people love golf pictures on LinkedIn.
And I think your tone is a good one. And what I appreciate about it is that you're consistent with it. Meaning that if you're going to do it, it's probably staying at about the same percentage of all of your posts over time. It's not that we go from feast to famine. So yeah, I think people, that consistency, when people are trying in an instant to size up, am I going to look at this or am I going to keep scrolling? I think that's good because it's a known quantity, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just don't be all over the place. Like, pick a lane.
Yeah. Figure out, you know, who you want to be online, and it should represent your brand offline and who you are, and it's staying true and authentic to that. But yeah, finding where that fits with your audience and what they want to see from you. So you know, the funny example is, you know, the first, when Instagram, you know, Instagram, everybody's on Instagram. Well, the first of your kind of friend group as you're growing up that has kids and they're posting all kids stuff all the time, well, they just lose 90% of their audience that just isn't at that stage of life yet, right? Because they don't want to see that. So they're leaning towards other, you know, channels and people, and you'll slowly fall out of their algorithm. So they won't see your posts anymore, kind of thing, right? So
yeah,
it's and that's just a very clear cut example of how it is. But
and your point about the algorithm is so apt. I think a really important thing is that any marketer out there has to appreciate how clever these algorithms are. So we all started with, and I'm thinking back to Twitter, where it was a real-time feed, and Twitter stuck it out with that kind of, you could see things in chronological order for quite some time, even as the other platforms decided that their algorithms would take over. And as you say, you know, not show the baby photos, you know, if someone doesn't have kids yet. And Twitter just recently announced, as the last holdout, they are no longer holding to chronological. They too are using their algorithm 100%. So we have to remember that there is this very big thing in the middle between us and our audience. Mm-hmm. This has some pretty practical intents. I remember people used to game scheduling, right? We were all looking at, okay, well, is 2 o'clock on Tuesday the best time to schedule? That's gone by the wayside. That doesn't matter anymore because the algorithm is choosing, you know, even if you posted at 5 o'clock last Friday, if it's looking at somebody and says, Kyle's post is good for this person to see, they're going to see it whenever.
Yeah, that's true. As long as it's within a couple of day range, I think. But yeah, I mean, I don't schedule posts. I'm not for scheduling. I find the platforms in the way you have to tag and post, and it just doesn't ever show up properly, I find. And you got to go in and edit it after. And I know some of the algorithms, if something's been edited, it gets into the news feeds less because it knows you've changed things, right? But like, I find like a Friday at 5 p.m., no matter what you post, I feel like it won't do very well.
Yeah.
You may have different.
That's an extreme example. It's probably not going to be the best. But the point of trying to write something so that it could carry for a week, you know, make it a little more evergreen. Don't put right into it, you know, this is Friday. Don't, you know, just be more, you know, this is September or this is October, right?
Yeah. I mean, the evergreen part is true. But yeah, I find the timing, people still I'll still see posts from brands going out, you know, 12 hours ago, and I'm looking at it at 9 or 10 a.m., which means somebody's posted at 9 or 10 p.m. because they finally probably got the creative they needed to put it out. And instead of waiting for an optimal time, they just like, oh, I got to get it out. It's here. And they chuck it out. And yeah, it may have come across my, you know, feed to look at, but there's rarely any engagement when you look at the, at those. And I find, I do find the timing is helpful.
Yeah, I guess all things being equal, you should put it out when people are up and when they're looking and when they're looking at their devices. We just have to still allow that the algorithm is smart enough to find people even when there aren't. And if your content is being lifted by a number of good comments, like that's even better, right? Because it tends to spread it farther.
Yeah, I mean, the more engagement on any platform that something gets, the more the algorithm will spread it because it knows it's a popular post and people want to see it and people want to engage with it. So, yeah, the more engagement you can get, especially early on, I find, in a post, the more it'll carry, the more impressions or reach it'll get.
So I got a tough question for you, Kyle. When we have tried to get that kind of engagement and we're just not happy with the numbers, we're trying to figure out, all right, well, if only a small percentage of these people are in market right now, and if an even smaller percentage are going to respond and maybe come and contact me, and I'm looking at my quarterly numbers, what's your take on whether people should be using paid social to widen the distribution of things that they're putting up? Is there a time or a place where that's a good idea?
I mean, it's never going to hurt if you have, you know, unlimited budget for you to kind of promote your content. I think it depends on your objectives as well. Right now, I find videos and LinkedIn ads, for example, are performing really well compared to promoting your guides to kind of generate leads, right, on LinkedIn ads. So, you know, you could chuck a ton of money into those guides right now and it may not return you anything. So would you do that again and again just to say you've got things promoted? Probably not. Probably not the best use of your resources. But if you have a great video and a great piece, video piece right now on LinkedIn, if I promote that and I just want to get more brand awareness and views on it, it's going to perform really well. So every time I do a video that is important, and I think it's kind of marquee content piece, I will definitely promote it, for example.
Sweet. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
So you've had a couple of opportunities, both in the recent past and in the very far past, to be kind of early into the game for social. So I'm thinking of a few times, and these aren't really related to your current job, but, you know, I remember not so long ago, you were involved in a charity boxing match.
Yeah.
And you were pretty heavy on social for that. So maybe you want to take us through, you know, behind the scenes with Kyle, not only his training, but, you know, what he was trying to do from a social media vantage point. I think you were trying to raise funds for it, right?
Yeah. So we were raising money for the Ottawa Regional Cancer Foundation. And for me, a lot of my network, and I'm very active on social. So a lot of my network that I would reach out for funding to are on social. A lot of my, you know, it's how I stay in touch with everybody from past and present. So I was heavy into raising money on social media, and that was basically my primary platform for raising money, for the event. So, I tried to make it fun, tried to, you know, keep it loose, but show that it was for an important cause, and one that was close to me. So, I had lots of social content during that campaign for sure.
Nice. So maybe if you can even take me further back, I'm trying to figure out a little bit of how Kyle came to, you know, use social media so well. I know from your own past that you even co-founded, and helped do the business development for a magazine. So not everybody has that in their background, but maybe if you could, you know, tell me, connect a few dots for me and tell me, you know, how even prior to social media being what it is, you were already looking to, you know, get the word out, to spread messages on things and try to find people where they were at.
Yeah, that's funny you say that. I think so I was in university when I first discovered Facebook, and that probably was like 06 or 07, I want to say. And it had just launched, but it was exclusive to university students. You had to have the university email address to sign up for Facebook. I kind of very early on learned the power of social media. Having a house at St. FX, we would promote on Facebook they were having a party. And, you know, the amount of people that would show up was insane, right? We'd have like cabs lining up outside our house, a few hundred people there. And a lot of that was Facebook. And, you know, the police were calling the landlord, telling them we had, somehow the police were monitoring the Facebook at St. FX, but, it kind of showed the power of Facebook and how it can bring people together. So when my brother, who was my co-founder at Faces Magazine, as you mentioned, we launched it in 07 or no, 08, I believe. We launched 07 or 08 that we launched the magazine. And our only promotion tool as two recent grads who just graduated from university was social media. It was Facebook because we had no money for anything else.
Right.
And we had no budget for advertising. So it was literally just, we had a Facebook group and we knew our audience was on Facebook because our audience was kind of young, you know, the young recent grads or university students. And we built a really good community online for a printed kind of magazine. So that everybody looked to it, and then the advertisers caught on that this was, you know, attracting their target market, and then that's how we were able to get a lot of the advertising, and it kind of snowballed from there. But nice. Yeah, so I had an early start.
Yeah, and it made you a believer, right? I mean, yeah. you clearly at that point were convinced that it had legs.
Yes, and the one thing I never got into though was Twitter. I didn't get on Twitter till real late, and I never was able to kind of capitalize on that platform. But I think that's okay. And I think that's important for people to know that you don't have to be on every platform crushing it. It's, there are marketers that I've spoken with, you know, this year, 2021, who say Twitter's their best platform for driving revenue. For me, I've never driven any revenue from Twitter or even know how to use it properly anymore. Like, I haven't been on in ages, right? So it's finding what's going to work for you and how it fits with you, and then kind of finding how to perform in that manner.
Yeah, well put. You shouldn't be overwhelmed by this. You can take it one bite at a time, figure out what works, and then just stay in that groove.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome. Kyle, where can people reach out to you and say hi?
LinkedIn probably. Although I did just mention my inbox gets hammered. But reach out and just put in the subject line. They heard me on Glenn's podcast.
And, all right.
You know, we're just trying to say hi or wanted to say anything they wanted. Feedback. If they want to, you know, argue with me, we can do arguments over DM. So it's probably the easiest way. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Kyle. And speaking of social media, if after listening to this episode, you want to reach out to myself or to the podcast and either argue or maybe suggest something for a future show, you can do that on LinkedIn as well as the podcast itself has Instagram and Twitter accounts at Funnel Reboot, and we would love to hear from you. And once again, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Follow the show on Twitter at Funnel Reboot. If you like what you have heard today, please consider leaving a review wherever you get your podcasts.